This is On the Other Hand. A podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
So we had a great conversation, Glenn, with John Brummett in our previous episode, and now we'll continue with the second part of the conversation we had with John. And this episode, John really talks about that our ultimate assignment as human beings is to make connection with each other, and also about the importance of building a movement for human connectedness in the midst of our polarized times.
So there are a couple of things at least that kind of get bees in my bonnet, as they say, that I wanted to kind of mention to you to see if you have any thoughts on what to do about it. And it's basically real serious concerns I have about what's happening now. And I want to give it, not to get into false equivalency, some may accuse me of, but I want to say it's something that happens on both sides.
By the way, saying it happens on both sides is not to say
in equal amounts.
No.
Right. Yes. And so I'm not going to get into apportioning blame, but basically both sides, one of the problems it seems to me is there are some real problems in our society that government needs to address, but they don't, because keeping it as a problem gives, it serves as a recruiting and rallying point for that party. Example, one for each side, Social Security and immigration. And when you have things like that that make people in the party say, we don't want to solve it because it's in our best interest for it to remain unsolved, that's a real problem. It's a case of power being more important than the good of the country. And then another thing is the value of truth and using facts is being undermined because of the repeated extreme language that is used against the other side. An example, these are kind of stereotypical things, but you've heard them. One is, one side says, well, because of the way you believe, you hate America. Mm-hmm. Or the other side says, well, you're just a racist knuckle dragger. All right. Mm-hmm. So both sides engage in that. One, it's stating a reality that really isn't accurate. And it also is, it's a very divisive and mean-spirited message that tends to move us apart and keeps us from being willing to come together and work on some of the problems we've got. So you get where I'm coming from.
I know exactly where you're coming from.
You got any thoughts on what to do about it?
No, other than what we've been saying, which is a steady, committed effort to improve dialogue and learn to emphasize our human connectedness more than our political instincts. But what you say, what renders me frustrated is, and I said earlier, a few minutes ago, I'm pretty much sick of both political parties. For example, on the issue of guns, there are, I believe, sensible things about guns that the vast majority of the American people, the American voters, would accept. Background checks at gun shows, things like that take nobody's gun, that violate no constitutional liberty, that the people would accept. And I fancy this a center-out president of persuasiveness and high poll numbers calling a summit on this, and both parties and all affected parties, and bringing them in. And we're gonna say at the beginning, everybody's gonna think this is less than we need to do, but it's gonna be more than we can do otherwise. And we're gonna work on this on some sensible gun legislation that the majority of Americans support. That could be done, but for the fact that the two bases won't allow it. It's the gun lobby on one hand, and it's people of an intolerant liberalism on the other. And so we get nothing. Nothing is improved because It is more in the interest of the political parties to keep their base happy, because that's how that's their best chance to win. Both parties are now now settled on a basic mathematically tied country. That's what we got. Now, how do we navigate it? Well, we've got to keep what we got by pandering to it, and we've got to keep the other side demonized so that our people will never start agreeing with them. That way, we've got a chance to win in the Electoral College, if not the popular vote, or we've got a chance to hold a one-vote majority counting two independents in the Senate. That is the political dynamic, the political math, the political expertise, using that in quotes, that's being applied. And it feeds on the division. Guns, abortion. I always wondered, once the pro-life movement gets what it wants, what are they going to do? You know? But fortunately, there is wokeism, and there's other issues that have arisen. Plus, that one is not fully settled because it's an argument in every state and the role of the federal government. But no, our current political experts have settled on a competitive, on both sides, on a competitive strategy that depends on not solving the problems that feed their ability to succeed. That's simply where we are.
And then I would say that we, both sides then tend to demonize and dehumanize the other side. And when the leaders do that, average people who might otherwise be civil or at least think, well, in society, I can't get away with such behaviors, it starts to normalize those negative behaviors, and that takes us all down a very dark road that I don't like the way it looks.
Yeah.
So that's one of the concerns. But I don't want us to be totally negative, so I'm hoping April will
be positive,
bail us out on this. But I think that's what we're trying to do in Braver Angels, is we've got these negative things going on. We need to find some way to bring people back together, which is why we do some of the things we do. I don't know. Help me out here, April.
Yeah, I mean, in Braver Angels, I mean, I keep hearing stories, right, of stories of successes where people have worked across the aisle, where there are, even at the national level, that these common ground kinds of groups of legislators that are working together, but they don't get the media attention. So that's difficult, because we have these, this kind of, I liked how you described it. I mean, I don't like the problem, but pandering to our base and demonizing the other side being kind of what politics is today. I think about, oftentimes when I've talked to people, they say, well, maybe we can change it at the local level, right? Maybe we can do things, start at the grassroots level in our states. And as a conservative, I like that, perspective of kind of starting in your state and at the local level of how can we make change locally that might be able to illustrate. I mean, you mentioned Asa Hutchinson a while ago, and I think he tried to do that. I don't think he probably stands a chance in the political presidential race, but maybe he's too nice. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that the you mentioned apologizing, going on to talk about candidates, but debates. The Republican debate didn't give me hope that we have changed much in terms of our politics and the way that they were talking to each other and about each other and about the other side. But I have to think that, yes, we can do things differently, but it's going to have to go against the norm currently of the political parties.
What kinds of things are you doing? Are you having retreats, dialogue sessions, get people together?
April, why don't you answer that? As a national leader, you know more of the full range of things than I do.
Yeah, we have a kind of a branch of Braver Angels that is a training branch in which we provide workshops for people to learn how to to look at their own biases and learn how to speak and listen to the other side, and even to our own side, who is kind of maybe making fun of the other side. So we've got a series of workshops that kind of do those skills building things. And we also have opportunities in which we provide facilitated discussion between people on particular issues. So I just heard about one that's happening on the East Coast in one of the local area alliances or groups, that they're trying to get people across the U.S. to participate in this with them, where people who have different perspectives on how COVID was handled could actually get together and talk about, okay, what are the things that we kind of have, how have we stereotyped you, and how have you stereotyped us, and what is it that's good about our own perspective, but what's not so good about our own perspective. And so we have some really useful communication tools that we teach people. You brought up the abortion issue. I've done several Common Ground national workshops in which people that are pro-life and pro-choice get together, and they actually spend 3 hours together trying to figure out, okay, what is it that we have that are common concerns? What common values might we have? And what might be some policies that we could get around? And we always come up with things. And some of the groups, we have one Common Ground initiative right now that does those similar kinds of strategies to get people to come to some kind of agreement on some things, that's looking at election security. I think we've had maybe 20 groups that have done this Common Ground workshop across the U.S. that are coming up now with, here are some specific policy things that we think we could try at our states, local, state, and then national levels, so that we might be able to change policy. But we believe that you have to get people in the room to hear and to become curious and to listen and to not just be stuck in our political pandering to our base in order to do that. So I have seen some movement. But certainly I've had movement in my own personal life. I think what I hear, the stories. I attended the national convention recently in Gettysburg. And they held it in Gettysburg because they said this is where the bloodiest battle of the U.S. Civil War was. And we can go back there. We can actually do that kind of fighting with each other that leads to people being killed if that's what we want. But we have to believe that there's hope to do things differently. And there were an equal number of reds and blues in the room that of 800 people that came up and signed. Now, not all 800 were there on the Saturday when we did the signing, but signed a civil renewal declaration that we are willing to work together and come together as different political backgrounds, but as human beings, to say we can do things differently, starting at our local level to move it up to the national political level. It's not there yet, but we certainly are working on it.
We need a movement for human connectedness. That's what we need. There needs to be a movement. I mean, like gay rights and civil rights, because that's the great need. Mm-hmm. And I bet in some of these meetings, you're getting a lot of this, yeah, but even when people find areas on the abortion issue or something else where they agree, then they said that. Then they go to the more combative differences and say, "Yeah, but," you know. And you got to put the "yeah, buts" aside, mm-hmm, and emphasize the things that you're finding together. Let's go forth, not still mad about the "yeah, but." What about this? We just agreed on a lot of stuff. Let's work on that.
And that's exactly what they do, right?
Go forth and multiply with that view.
Absolutely.
But I also think, and I said this earlier, I'm political in terms of political tactics. The moderates, the center rights and the center lefts, have got to become not just people who sit around, and call themselves that, that has to become a political movement, has to become a political force. And then people think, well, you're starting to talk about a third party. I'm not. Things don't come from political parties. They come from the people. And here, for example, this may be crazy as heck, but indulge me. I was sitting watching that Speaker of the House controversy over McCarthy's eventual election. And every time the Democrats were automatically voting for Speaker, for their leader, Mr. Jeffries. Most of the Republicans voting for McCarthy, but these extremists were not. And so they voted over and over, and they never came to a conclusion. It occurred to me that if all the Democrats, a minority group, would combine with a group with the Republicans who are in a group called the Problem Solvers. That's what they call themselves. Mm-hmm. They're in the center. You take those Republicans, and they go to the Democrats and say, let's show some muscle on this next one. We need a Republican speaker because we won the majority. But we got one of our moderate Republicans who'd make a great speaker. We will break with McCarthy. We'll break with our party. If you all will vote as a party for a more moderate leadership, albeit one of the other party. That could have been done. And we'd have an entirely different tenor right now to our Congress had that happened. But people would be worried about, how am I going to do that? Can I get reelected doing that? Do I look like a sellout if I do that?
Well, you hit it. The other point about this then is that we need to have enough people in the middle who are willing to vote for
the middle,
for people who are reasonable and adhere to some of these values we're talking about in both parties, so that if you get a real loudmouth, mean-spirited person on either side, nope, not going to vote for them. But that's a hard ask, but that's what I think we have to do and what
right
we
now it's,
are trying to do.
If you vote with the other side, you are a rhino or dino, and you are ridiculed because you don't have real principles. Actually, you do.
That's the whole point.
Yeah. But we got to get that message out. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So, John, we're talking at the national level. I'd love for you to talk about Arkansas a minute, in terms of where you see us currently, in terms of our politics, and you know, your hopes that you might have, and concerns as well.
Arkansas politics, a couple things about it. It's always been true. It's kind of static. Whatever way it is, that's the way it's likely to be for a long time. You look at where the presidential race was decided last time, it's in the suburbs and exurbs of two places, Phoenix and Atlanta. Those people moved from elsewhere into those states and brought different attitudes that moderated their politics from what had been red and made them purple, and it was close, but their politics changed by influx, not being static cultures. Arkansas is a classic static culture. It just is. We don't grow that much. We don't change that much. Now, we got a lot of folks coming into Bentonville, and we got a world-class museum up there. And my old joke is, you cannot have a world-class art museum without some liberals coming around, you know? And I think that's probably true, but it's not in the numbers that we're talking about. It's not changing it. It's not changing it in a significant way. So we were one party, nominally Democratic for years. But the Democratic Party was just a neutral, nominal thing. You had the same very conservative rural legislators then. They just called themselves Democrats, and that's how they got elected. The dam broke with the Tea Party, which was a resistance to health care, maybe to Obama personally, and Arkansas is now, it had a seismic shift, and we're going to be what we are this way for a long time, absent any disturbing of the static culture. But we are now not neutral in our partisanship. because our politics is nationalized. It's hard to talk about Arkansas politics or Mississippi politics or Oregon politics in and of themselves anymore because everything is so nationalized. This particular current administration in Arkansas does not need to return my calls or acknowledge that I exist as a local journalist, because they can go on, they funnel their information to Arkansas in great numbers through the mass communication of Fox News. That's where you get your Arkansas news now. That's where Arkansas. I was on a panel with a very smart Republican consultant who said, Brummett, when you first started writing a column in the 80s, the governor, at the time Clinton, had to worry about you, whether you disapproved of what he was doing, be it a teacher test to try to pass a sales tax or any of those things we encountered. But more importantly, said, you were in the paper 4 or 5 days a week on the front page of the Metro section of the Arkansas Gazette, and you were setting the agenda. You were driving the coffee shop conversation for that day. Now all those people watch Fox News. They got their news in a national context. They got it more immediately than you deliver it. And a lot of people, some people are still reading it. Perhaps it's still useful to some people, but it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, we talk about that.
And that's simply where we are.
Yep.
And so we can talk about Arkansas all day, but one, it's naturally a static place. Two, it's all driven by national attitudes. Social media, cable news, these are cliches that they are poisons for our political dialogue. But they are. I mean, and you all know this. You and I think this is true. You and I could call up Google and get the little Google box and put the same words in there, and we're going to get different things folding forward based on what the algorithm has told Google or whoever. This is what this person will want to see.
Right.
So we can both do a search and find something to quote to support our position. And when you combine that with the full nationalization of politics and the decline of local media, not just the local newspaper, but local television stations, and local close-to-home newspapers, you know, you're hard-pressed in Fort Smith, I think, to get much local news. And I don't want to pick on Fort Smith, but I used to write for Stevens Media, which and it was published there, and it was a vibrant local paper, and now it's in some... It's some vague chain, and you know, it's, you're not getting issues so when you're close to home. So when you're trying to lift things up politically from the local level, it'll help. It may be vital that there's some news source that can let people know those things are happening, and that's not happening. So my view of Arkansas is it's gone conservative, and that's all right. It was always conservative, but now it's more. Now it's totally nationalized, and it's hyper-partisan, and it's got the same national afflictions. There's just not enough Democrats to put up much of a fight. So that's where we are, and conditions are, and that's not healthy. No matter what that's not a healthy way to have your politics. And I have no idea how to change it with all the forces that I can identify working against it.
Well, let me get to that, because
sure.
You know, what you got into, you actually kind of anticipated my next question, which was going to be about journalism and what's happened to it and what your views are, and you covered that pretty well. So I wanted to get to some potential solution or some measures to take to counter that. One of the things that's talked about a lot these days is maybe the value of teaching media literacy in the population, because there's so much media disinformation that we're exposed to. And without that media literacy, then everybody's more susceptible to propaganda, disinformation, just all sorts of media-based manipulation. So, and we actually talk about that a lot in Braver Angels. We talk at the least about having a broad quality media diet. In other words, okay, fine, you want to listen to Fox News, fine. Also, spend some time listening to what MSNBC has. Find some of these other moderate, middle-of-the-road things. Maybe you listen to you read the Wall Street Journal. Maybe you read The Hill. Maybe you read the Christian Science Monitor, and just any number of things that have a variety of viewpoints. So you have a long history in journalism, so you probably are as well suited to comment on this as anyone. What thoughts do you have to do with this current state of, the disinformation environment we have? How can we best deal effectively with that?
Well, what you're describing is an answer, but I've been in politics journalism a long time, and writing about politics, and I find that even in happier times, when newspapers had credibility and were pervasive in the population, people don't have time they don't have time to read a lot of sources, and they don't have enough money to subscribe to all those sources, particularly in a state like Arkansas. And one reason newspapers had so much influence was because at least you could get it in the morning and find time for the paper, and you could read either my column or the front page or the headline and then read over to the sports. And you would have a superficial understanding, often an insufficient superficial understanding, but at least a superficial understanding of what the conversation is today. Would you tell somebody, hey, you need to keep looking at what's left of that newspaper on your iPad, but you also need to read this and this and this and go over to this? They're thinking, man, I'm out here trying to make a living. You can sit up there and do your little podcast and read all that you want to, and good for you. But I ain't got time for it. Mm-hmm. And my transmission's about to fall out, and my refrigerator's not cooling. And that's what I got to deal with. So the advantage, while it was superficial, and while 30 minutes of local news was superficial, it was incredibly valuable in being able to define an agenda. This is what the conversation is in your area today. Even if people didn't, because they didn't have time to read the whole newspaper. Nobody read the whole newspaper. Not very many people did. So we're up against it. You're asking me, because I've been in news business a long time, to tell what we do about this, and I simply have no idea. I simply don't.
The system, the way it is now, is just not designed to accomplish for the average person what we're wanting to do.
It would almost be better if people were getting less information, because they're getting all bad information.
Yeah, yeah.
On all sides. When you are automatically directed to something you can cite to support your position, then nobody is well informed. So, I mean, I don't mean to be negative, and I'm getting, when you get my age, I'm 69, everything that's coming seems like the world's going to hell. I've heard that from people from the seniors forever through my life. And I used to think, I used to say to my friend and former Gazette columnist, Robert McCord, who was quite a bit older, and a mentor at one point, I said to him, Bob, calm down. Things aren't that bad. And now I realize Bob was right. there is an advantage to seeing to having the perspective of, it wasn't this way before, and folks, it was a lot better the way before. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to resist progress. I'm just saying that I'm alarmed. And I'm alarmed not just by what I see, but how do we get out of it? Yeah. Of course, so much of what some smart people, and maybe it'll be the braver angels, are going to work on something that begins to change the ship at sea. That's all you're going to do is just change. It's just change this direction a little today. It's going to take some time.
I just hear you saying the current status of media and the way we consume information and the way it's conveyed is a real problem. You don't see the solution right away, but I feel I'm always an optimistic person, despite all the evidence to the contrary, that there is a way for it to get better eventually if the right people apply to it, and that's what we hope.
But things have happened that are good, and they can still happen, but they usually come not from newspaper columnists or politicians. They come from earnest, hardworking people with patience.
Yeah, and that's what I want us to end with is we, our listeners, are earnest, hardworking people with patience that can make a difference. And the people in Braver Angels are that as well. And it's from Braver Angels that I learned about the flip side and All Sides Media. Does kind of a nice combination of looking at media from multiple different perspectives. And you know, even Walk a Mile in My News. They have a activity that you can do with somebody for 2 weeks where you're actually, they tell you what their news outlets are and you tell them what your news outlets are from one side to the other side. And you listen and read theirs for 2 weeks and they listen and read yours for 2 weeks. And then you get back together to talk about that. So I think that's there's some interesting kinds of things these everyday people can do.
I would almost go for immersion in your counter media culture. For a Fox News person to take a month and stay off, block it on their streaming TV and just watch MSNBC and the MSNBC watch that. And behold each other's world and see what changes. But more importantly, how you came to understand how people can have the views that they have. You know,
I would agree with that, except I'd also add some of the moderate voices more in the middle range.
Which are what?
Well, you know, I think to me, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette,
yes, yes,
despite its largely conservative editorial policy on the extreme left side there of the page, is still has a really good balance of news that's largely factual, and they have both left and right editorialist in the opinion section. There's the Hill, which is a national kind of newsletter that I think is very good, and I subscribe to that. But you know, April was talking about, you know, like All Sides and the Flip Side. Those are very quick reads that would be good for people who don't have much time. But then I would also say that if people have time, and I know they do, if you have time for social media to be on Facebook or X or whatever, then every choice you make and every like you give is going to dictate what the algorithm gives you. You need to actually purposefully seek out some things that are different.
I love it when somebody calls me out and enlightens me on something. So I'm saying people don't have time, and you're pointing out there are a whole lot of people with more time than they need to have if you look at the social media activity. So, yeah. And I appreciate what you said about the Democrat Gazette. I was a Gazette guy. We were at war with the Democrat. My politics were to the left of center. It's a right of center paper. But there was a recent survey of major publications, and it ranked them on balance. And the number one most balanced editorial product in this survey was the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And they're not perfect, but no one is, and nothing is. But the news, you can trust the news columns. It may not be the most in-depth reporting in the world. It may not be the greatest writing in the world. You can trust the presentation of fair-minded, accurate information. But the marvelous thing, for me, I mean, if you take my story and put it in Shreveport, Louisiana, I'd be, doing yard work for a living because I don't know what else I could have done. But in this town, when the newspaper war ends, the surviving guy whom I'd been against gives me a contract to write for him. He said, I value different opinions. Now, there may be a business factor in that because Little Rock is key to his readership. Let's consider that. And so he needs a Little Rock, known Little Rock commentator. But you get today Cal Thomas and you get who I'd rather not read, but I'm glad he's there. You get me, you get Phil Martin, you get Rex Nelson. Rex, you know, he can be a lifelong Republican who suddenly goes a direction. Both the syndicated and local. And the local is the amazing thing because these other papers don't pay people to do that at the local level. So, yes, more newspapers like the Democrat Gazette, I'd say.
You have provided us so much, John. It's been our pleasure to be able to listen to you today. And I've written down a page of notes of just nuggets of good things that are takeaways. And so I really, really appreciate your time. Wondered, is there anything else you want to share with the listeners before we close up today?
Be thankful for a good newspaper. Be thankful for people who are, be thankful for the human connection and milk it and develop it. And be thankful for a group like this. You guys could be doing something else rather than sitting here listening to me go on. And good luck to you.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us.
This has been great.
Well, thank you, John. It's been great to talk to you. We hope you enjoyed the second part of today's discussion with John Brummett. Be sure to check out the first part of this two-part conversation we have with John, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. And you can find those on the podcast page of the Braver Angels Arkansas website, and that's found at arkansas.braverangels.org. Again, that's arkansas.braverangels.org. Or you can find us on many popular podcast sites.
When you visit our website, in addition to links to all our episodes, you'll also find a link to email us at otherhandar@gmail.com with your program feedback or suggested speakers. That email again is otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band. Dr. Richard Main, conductor. We also thank the Central Arkansas Library System's Roberts Library for use of their recording facility for this interview.
From your host, Glenn White,
and April Chatham Carpenter,
let's each do our part to bring our community closer together.